am just an alcoholic. If you can't tell, I brought a wild bunch with me. Grateful to be here, guys. My sobriety date is November 26, 2016. So I just celebrated 5 years. And where to begin? There's so much to my story. It's crazy. Every time I speak, it's something different. So I was born in like the sticks in Florida. You know, up there where like Georgia, Florida, and Alabama all meet. So there's like nobody knows it's there. And growing up in the South and growing up in the very rural part of the world and just very different way of life. When I moved here, it was a little bit of a culture shock because I was not used to this many people. And, you know, when you're from a town of like 15,000 people in the whole county, it's like a different lifestyle. So I was raised by a Southern Baptist preacher, so that was fun. And, you know, religion was a very, very big part of my growing up. Everything was based around religion, based around, you know, being at church every time the doors were open. Just, you know, I really, as an adult, I kind of felt like it was shoved down my throat a lot. You know, I couldn't get away from it. It was everywhere I went. And, you know, I never really felt like I fit in there. I never felt like I belonged there. You know, being there was very uncomfortable. And so as I grew up, it was just a very awkward time. It was hard to, you know, you're in this family of very religious people. You don't agree with it, but yet you have to be there. You're not old enough to say, you know, no, I'm not going. But, you know, you're sitting there 4 or 5 times a week listening to something that you don't agree with. And then to make matters worse, my grandfather was the preacher. So, I guess around about 14, I just decided that I was going to go buck wild and not listen to anybody and just act like a holy terror in the whole county. And, you know, doing that in a small town has its advantages and its disadvantages. I couldn't go anywhere without somebody saying, oh, I know your grandfather. Oh, that's nice. Probably not supposed to be here. I couldn't get away with anything. I got caught doing everything I tried to do. You know, skipping school and, you know, there's somebody that knows me because I've grown up there, born and raised there. So I couldn't get away with anything. And so by the time I was about 14, everybody just kind of gave up. I guess they just thought I was going to be one of those kids that, you know, didn't do anything right. So I got into this crowd of people that I finally felt like I fit in. And I finally felt like they were my people. Like I understood them. And you know, when you're a teenager, you know everything. Like nobody can tell you anything. And being wild, being 14 years old, I was like, oh, well, let's just, you know, sneaking out of the house. Nobody knew where I was at. I mean, I could have been laying dead in a ditch somewhere and nobody would have known where I was at. And doing all of that, I fell in this crowd and I started drinking, started doing drugs. I'm like 14 years old. And I felt like I belonged. I felt like I was meant to be there. And I got along with these people. You know, I was always this outcast because when your parent is a preacher, like people don't like being friends with you. You know, it's so weird. But it was obviously the wrong crowd to be in. It was the wrong crowd to even hang out with. You know, a lot of those people that I hung out with at that time in my life aren't alive now. And they've OD'd, they've been murdered, they've been, you know, all these different ways of dying, and, you know, somehow or another made it out alive. So I ended up dropping out of high school. I just decided, you know, that's not for me. why do I need that? I don't need to do that. So drop out of high school and just, you know, I had no direction, no consequences, no guidance in life. Everything was just, you know, we can't control her, so she's going to do whatever she wants to do, and so we're just going to let her. And luckily I got out a lot of my criminal activity before I turned 18. But you know, looking back on it now, I don't even know how I made it to 18. And so I ended up with no college, no high school education, no real morals. Just all I knew was how to be wild, how to party, how to hang out with the wrong people. And when the world started crumbling down, and it was either I'm going to go to jail or I'm going to skip town and haul ass to another state. So that's what I did. I came to Virginia. And, you know, for a while it was honestly probably the best thing that ever happened to me. You know, that I've made a lot of geography changes in my life. And every time was to get away from all the bad that I was doing. And it did work for a little while. You know, I went and got a high school GED. I ended up going to a military high school for at-risk youth. I didn't think I was at risk, but I was. So I graduated, at least got a GED. Went to college. It took me 12 years to finish an associate's degree. So had a couple of kids, got married. And you know, I got married like when I was 20. And I don't think at 20 years old, any of us know how to have a relationship, how to be married, how to raise kids, how to raise a husband because he was still a child. And you know, how to live life. You know, I had a decent job for a 20-year-old, just, you know, bought a house, all this stuff, and have this husband, and now 23, I'm pregnant. And all that time, you know, when I was married before the kids came along, it was like all we did was drink all the time. You know, every night we were going out to dinner, drinking till midnight, come home, do it all over again. On the weekends, it was game on. Every night, all day long. And because I live right next to the bar, which is a great place to buy a house if you're an alcoholic. that was one of the stipulations, by the way, for buying that house. But, you know, everybody crashed at my house. It was like the party house, and you would think we were 18-year-olds living there, and we were in our 20s. And so that was all we did. And then when I got pregnant, it was like, can't do that anymore. And I was absolutely miserable. You know, I can't drink. I got a husband who's a good guy, just immature. And all I wanted to do was go out and drink, party, you know, hang out with everybody. But I didn't even fit in with anybody anymore because everybody was still single and partying and no kids, no marriage. So all of our friends kind of fell out of our lives. And when that happened, I mean, it was probably 8 years of my life before that I didn't even bother drinking. Like, I'm so busy with a husband, with two kids. You know, we just didn't. And it was every now and then we would go out and have drinks, but nothing major. But emotionally, I was a wreck. And I was just angry, and like, you know, you could say something to me and I was all of a sudden just severely pissed off and ready to yell and scream. And, you know, I was in really no shape to be a parent. And, you know, looking back on it, I can see where, you know, you take that alcohol away, and even though I'm not drinking, which is a good thing, you know, emotionally I'm just a disaster. And living like that for, you know, 7 or 8 years is like, well, I guess it was less than that, like 3 or 4 years. It's not really good for a marriage. And it's really, when you're that young and you don't know how to handle a marriage to begin with, it's really bad on a marriage. So I ended up leaving him because I was like, I can't handle this. Like, I can't handle this marriage. I can't handle you. And looking back on it today, I can tell you that, I mean, he's a good guy. He's a good dad. He's just, we were young and stupid. And so when I left him, it was like, I have these two kids. I'm a single mom now. Like, how am I going to do this? And I didn't drink, but I was still crazy. Like, how are you that crazy whenever all you've taken away is alcohol? But I was just insane, like angry all the time, emotional. I would be depressed 1 minute, screaming and hollering the next. Like, it just never made any sense. Like, I was just, it was chaotic. And going through all of that, now I look back on it and I'm like, I really missed a lot of my kids' lives because I was just so wrapped up in being crazy. But I never in any of this time felt like I had a problem. Like, I just thought that's who I am. I mean, you know, again, I'm from small town USA. They're like, AA is not a thing. And I can tell you from going back down there to visit, there's 3 meetings there a week and they don't exist. Like, I've never found them. You have to drive an hour. That's the closest one I've actually found that was there whenever you show up. So, you know, I do the craziness for a few years. No husband, 2 kids. Still not drinking. And then I decide, well, I'm going to, you know, go back to work. And, you know, when I go back to work, it's like game on. You know, I have these 2 kids. I have a babysitter. My kids are with their dad every summer and a couple of weeks out of the year. So when the kids are gone, it's like crazy time for me. Like, I just drink from sunup to sundown, you know, 7, 8 days a week. And there's always a good reason. You know how it is to be an alcoholic. You don't really need a reason, right? You just, it's Tuesday. So, exactly, always. So I go through this like year or so of my life where I'm just like, all I wanted was my kids to not be there. Because if my kids are there, then I can be this person that I want to be. And I used to not understand when people said that they chose alcohol and drugs over their kids. And then I started doing a 4th step and I'm like, holy shit, I did that. But, you know, you don't think about it in that time. You don't think about the fact that you're choosing alcohol over your kids. And that's what I did. I ended up making all these crazy decisions, you know, a bunch of geography changes and a bunch of going, hopping from boyfriend to boyfriend just because, you know, I don't know how to be alone and I I need somebody to party with. So I have this long list of crazy boyfriends that are crazier than me. And one's worse than the next. So, you know, I thought the first one was bad. He wasn't bad. He was actually mild. But, you know, going through all this time, I never thought I had a problem. Never thought that, you know, well, maybe I should seek help for any of this. I just thought this is who I am. So make all these crazy decisions, move a couple of times. I ended up somehow or another moving to Indiana with my sister, my sister now is in and out of mental institutions, so she's a good one for me to run to, you know. And going there, I thought was going to be this like new life, a new life change and all this stuff. It never happened that way because it didn't last 6 months with my sister. And I took the crazy boyfriend with me, by the way. And the crazy boyfriend, let me tell you, he's a winner. he's in prison now, so I can talk about him. But he drank and drugged as bad as I did. And that's why we were great together. I mean, we spent like 2 years together because we competed with each other on how much we could drink. And he was okay with staying out as late as I wanted to stay out to drink and party, which was unusual. Like, I'm used to people going, oh my God, I'm so tired. And I'm like, oh my God, like, how do you want to stop drinking? You know, this is only day three. Like, why? And so he could keep going, which was nice. So we stayed together. You know, that's a great reason to stay in a relationship. And it really started going downhill bad because at the end of our relationship, he was on the marijuana maintenance program also. And that program is only good when you have marijuana. Like, it's you get this different person when you run out. And he would run out, and then he would take it out on me. And, like, you know, the last night he was there, he got really drunk and, like, picked me up by my arm, threw me against the wall, and I was like, oh, no. You know, everything else to this point has been okay, but you're not going to beat me up. So I threw him out. But I didn't learn anything from it. Like, all I did was sit there and I was mad, but I wasn't mad to the point of, like, I wasn't going to be with him anymore, but I wasn't mad to the point that I thought that alcohol or drugs had anything to do with all of this. I just thought that he's crazy. Well, I'm also crazy, so, you know, we were a great pair, but whenever he left, that whole childhood wildness came right back, and that's when I was really starting to go downhill. That's when I really started to, you know, it was back to that sun up, sun down, just a constant partying. And in the midst of all of this stuff going on, I went through a 9-year-long custody battle for my kids. My ex-husband was like, she's crazy, she doesn't need the kids. And I'm like, oh, I'm not crazy. And, you know, judges can see through this, okay? And a custody battle is like this up and down roller coaster of emotions. Like, one day you think that everybody is on your side, and then the next day everybody's like coming at you, telling you that you're not fit to be a parent. And then the next day, the other one is, you've said something about the other one that the court's like, oh my God. And it's just a mess. But emotionally, it takes a toll on you. Like, every day is something different. And So after I throw him out of the house, I mean, I get these like letters in the mail from like lawyers, and I'm like, I don't need that. You know, just throw it away. What did it matter? I mean, all I want to do is drink and drug, so I'm just going to throw away all these court documents. And somewhere along the way, I signed one of them and sent it back to him, and I don't even know what it was. But apparently, I found out later on, it gave him like permission to file anything he wanted to in court without me even being notified. And so I was apparently drunk or something, signed this piece of paper and sent it back to the courts, giving him whatever rights he wanted to file in court without even telling me, without even having to like serve me legal papers or anything. And so I do all of that, and I'm like, okay. So I get these like legal papers, and you know, you would normally like think, huh, maybe I should look at my life and look at what I'm doing. So I would have these like glimpses, I guess, of sanity. And I would have these glimpses of like, okay, let me slow down and look at this stuff. But then I would get so overwhelmed by looking at everything that I had that's piled up. I mean, I got a car in repossession. I got, you know, all these bills from bill collectors. People calling me all the time, and I would just change my phone number because I would get tired of the bill collectors calling me. And all this court stuff hanging over my head, you know, being taken to court for like all this financial stuff too. And all this stuff just piling up on me. So when I would get these like glimpses of sanity, I would start looking at all this stuff, but I would get so overwhelmed by it that I was just like, oh, whatever, I don't need it. And I'd go right back to drinking. And you can only really do that for so long. I mean, it gets to the point where you just, it catches all up to you, and it tends to do it all at one time. So then you're really overwhelmed because it's really bad whenever it all catches up on you. And so all of this stuff is piling up. I've signed this paper that he can just do whatever he wants to do. And anyway, in the midst of all this, he gets temporary custody of my kids. And at this time, they're pretty young. I mean, they're like 6 and 7, 7 and 8 years old, something like that. They're not very old. And when that happened, I think that just kind of like flipped a switch in me, because all that drinking and drugging that I did all those years ago, it was just right back. And I'm still this emotional mess. I do have a job, but let me tell you about my job. My job was a bartender, so it's it was great. I mean, the more I drank, the more money I made. And the more money I made, the happier I was, because I had the money to go back to doing the drugging part that I enjoyed so much when I was younger. And so I'm an alcoholic. I don't know I'm an alcoholic. I'm a drug addict. I don't know I'm a drug addict, because I think that drug addicts are like the bums on the street corner. And, you know, I have a job as a bartender, so that's helpful for me. And I find this boyfriend who's like, I guess he like makes drugs or whatever. And so I wasn't having to pay for the drugs, which was also great. And all of this stuff is just making my life, what I think what is making my life better. And all of this stuff is just piling up on me, and I'm thinking, oh, well, just, I'm not even going to think about all this stuff with my kids. I'm not going to think about all this stuff with, you know, the financial stuff and all the court stuff. I'm just going to drink and drug, and that's great. So that's what I did for, I don't know, a year and a half. And I went from the drug cook who's now got me strung out on drugs that drug quit working. So I had to switch drugs because I needed something that gave me that feeling like whenever I first started doing it. And then I realized, I remember thinking to myself, oh, this is bad for you. Like, I hear you can get, like, you know, scars and stuff from this. So I went back to the old drug. And, because, you know, that's bad for you. And I go, so I'm swapping back and forth for a while. And then I decided that I'm not going to do either one of those. And I'm going to go do this other drug because it's better for you and it's cleaner and it's not made in somebody's, like, basement. And I do all of that. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, you know, my life is pretty good. And a friend of mine told me like a couple of years ago, she was like, you know, you used to talk about how great your life was. And I'm like, I did? Like, how do you think your life is good when, you know, you're drinking and drugging sun up to sundown? I mean, I would stay up for like 7 days in a row and then like sleep for like 3 days and then get up and do it again all over, you know, seven more days. And it was like a game. The highlight of our week was a game to see who passed out first. And I mean, that's a sad goal to have, like see who can stay up the most days of everybody. It's just craziness. But we end up doing that for year and a half. And then I guess, at the end of it, it was a very, like, I was in a dark place. Like, emotionally, I was just in a dark place to where I just didn't care. I didn't care if I lived. I didn't care if I died. I didn't care about my kids. I didn't care about anything going on around me. All I cared about was what's right in front of me, which is the drugs and alcohol. And everything else just did not matter. So I ended up having this episode, I guess, from doing too many drugs, and I thought I was going to die. And that kind of woke me up a good amount. And looking back on it now, I can say that God has a way of being there for you even when you don't ask Him to be there. I couldn't tell you how many times that I should have died. And from drinking, from drugging, from driving drunk, from, you know, like, I'm one of those people that if I'm going to drink, I'm going to drive. Like, it's not a matter of I might. I'm like going to. Like, I can't sit still in one spot. I got to go. And I never drank at home. I always drank out somewhere. And I wouldn't let anybody else drive because I was the only person who knew how to drive drunk. And so, you know, I'm almost dying from basically a drug overdose. And in that same week, I got this letter, and I don't know what caused me to open it, but I opened this letter, and it's like City of Chesapeake Family Court, and, you know, this is going to be your final child custody hearing. However, you know how legal stuff, it says 9,000 words to say three. And so all of this stuff, and I'm like, holy shit, this thing is going to be finalized. Like, I might want to do something about this. So I was like, you know, the only way I'm ever going to get back my kids is if I straighten my life up. And when I hear the word final, like, I know what final means. As messed up as I was, I knew that that was serious. So once again, I do what good alcoholics do, and I make a geography change. And I go hauling ass back to Florida where my parents are. You know, my parents' house has always been this house of, like, I always respected them enough to never drink and drug in front of them. And so I knew if I went there, I wouldn't, I might drink, but I won't do drugs. And so I got in the car the next morning and drove 21 hours from Indiana to Florida, straight through, detoxing the whole way. Not a good way to detox, by the way. It was not fun. And got there, and that's where I stayed for a while. And I kept on drinking for like 6 months. But I felt a lot better about myself because I wasn't drugging anymore. But that whole time, I went right back to that emotional hot mess that I was when I was married. You know, all that anger, all that just chaos in my life just came right back. And, you know, at this point, I'm kind of seeing in a way that I might have a problem, but I'm not going to do anything about it because I'm okay. I've quit now. But it was like every day I was white knuckling it. And every day I was constantly, like, I couldn't even focus on anything because that's all that was on my mind. So even though I quit drugging, I kept on drinking. And so my drinking just increased. I just traded vices, really. And when I traded vices, I felt better about myself because, I mean, I am sleeping at night at this point. You know, I'm sleeping like a normal person, so I must be doing something better for myself, but I'm still emotionally just crazy. So I ended up going back to a previous job I had, which was selling helicopters. And I did it for like 4 years. And I drank the whole time that I was doing it, and it never... I worked for another alcoholic. So when you work for an alcoholic, it's easy to be an alcoholic. You know, because this is in the woods in Florida, like my moonshine... like guy would bring me moonshine at my office, like, and he would deliver it. And, you know, my bosses were okay with this kind of thing. You know, everybody would put in their orders for moonshine before we went on these trips to go to air shows. Like, it was just the thing to do. We would put in the RV in the cooler and it'd be cold for us when we got there. And you know, looking back on it now, I was like, we went through a lot just to have cold moonshine. but even though I had a good job, even though I had, you know, a lot of things going for me, emotionally, I was on the verge of tears every single day. I had all this baggage just on me. I'm just drinking to cover up all the emotions. And I still don't really think I have a problem. I'm pretty okay with myself because I had quit doing the drugs, but now I'm still drinking. And I ended up getting like a hair follicle drug test, and I just somehow kind of managed to skim through that because I had luckily been off of it just long enough that the courts were like, okay, you know, we'll give you a try and see what happens. I ended up, in the end, not losing my kids. I did get them back years later. It took us another 2 or 3 years to get divorced and get all that straightened out. But I ended up stopping drinking just because I knew I was never going to fully get my kids back. And I don't know where I found the strength to quit drinking on my own. But I did, and I guess it's another one of those times where God was with me even though I didn't ask him to be. So I quit drinking. I'm still a hot mess. I'm still trying to hop around boyfriends, still trying to find one that makes me feel good about myself or whatever. And I ended up moving to Virginia right after I quit drinking. I moved to Virginia. And I moved back up here to be with my kids so that we could have, like, 50-50 custody. And because I was still in Florida, so it's not really, I mean, he was having them the whole year. I was getting them for summer, and I'm like, this is not enough. So I moved back up here. And life got interesting when I moved back up here. I couldn't bring my boyfriend with me from Florida, so I had to find a new one because I don't know how to be single. And I mean, I've been through the marijuana maintenance program guy who's also an alcoholic. I've been through the federal parolee that had just gotten out of federal prison. He was a winner, let me tell you. And, you know, I've been through a whole long list. Some of them were so short-lived, I don't even remember them. And I get here, and I'm like, I've lived here before, but it's different now, and I don't really know anybody. So after a couple of months, I went on online dating. I swiped right and ended up in AA. And yeah. So the guy that I went on this date with, like online date, was a guy in the rooms. And he, you know, I was like, I can't date anybody that drinks. Because if I date somebody that drinks, then that's going to tempt me to drink. And I'm still white knuckling it. I can't be around it. And so on the very first date, he's like, so why don't you drink? And I'm like, I just don't know when to stop once I start, which isn't a lie. I didn't really want to go into the part about, you know, I wake up 3 days later in another state, or, you know, I thought that was like embarrassing. And so I tell him, I'm like, I just, you know, don't know how to stop once I start. And he was like, well, have you ever thought about going to a meeting? And I'm like, nope, not going to do that. And so I guess I'm trying to impress this guy, so I'm like, I go to a meeting. And going to a meeting was like, these people are kind of weird. You know, they're definitely people that I get. Like, I understood what people were talking about in the meeting. But the very first meeting I went to was a women's meeting. And it should have probably not been my first meeting. But at the end of it, they said the Lord's Prayer, and I'm like, I can't deal with this religious stuff. Like, I'm so resentful to religion that I just couldn't do it. So I'm telling him about it and like why I didn't like it, and of course I've talked myself out of ever going to another meeting. And he's like, well, why don't you try a different one? So I tried a different one. And it was actually decent. And I stayed there for a long time, going to that meeting, going to other meetings. But, you know, I have this track record of always picking the wrong guys. And he was definitely one of those. And I didn't know. Like, I thought sober guy, like, you know, great, great person because he's sober. And little did I know that that was going to be the most emotionally abusive and verbally abusive relationship I'd ever had. And you know, when you're thinking about somebody that's, you know, sober, you know, a few years, and they're in a program, they're doing all these things, and you hear all these people at these meetings, and you're like, oh, well, you know, all these other people sound like they're pretty cool, and they got their stuff together, and yet you're sitting next to somebody that's doing all of those things. I don't think as a newcomer, I knew that was, time doesn't mean anything. And it was the hardest relationship for me to get out of. It was the hardest relationship for me to overcome emotionally. And it was the hardest relationship that I ever had out of all the craziness. But something happened, because I didn't know you could hit rock bottom in sobriety. I thought rock bottom was a thing you did when you got done drinking and drugging. But I found out that it's possible to do that in sobriety. And I'm like 3 or 4 years, 3 years sober. I have no program. And I'm like going crazy. And I finally called my sponsor one day. And I mean, up to this point, I've just called her and complained. And she says, well, have you thought about praying? And I'm like, nope, not on my list of things to do. But I'm so over it, don't know how to get myself out of this hole, just in such a dark area, even though I'm like, I'm sober, like 2.5, 3 years sober. She's like, well, do this, this, and this, and see if that works. And I'm like, okay. And so I do that stuff, and all of a sudden, like, I've got this courage and strength that I never had before. And I've got this outlook that I can do this, and this is what I need to do. And I'm actually thinking methodically about what the steps are that I need to take to get myself out of this situation. And I didn't ask for any of that. Like, I wasn't praying, asking God to help me, like, figure out financially how can I get out of this. I'm asking God, like, what do I do here, you know? And all of this stuff just starts happening to me. I mean, I woke up one morning, and I'm, like, laying there in bed, like, scrolling through Facebook, and next thing I know, I'm, like, looking at like apartmentguide.com or something, and I'm like freaked out over it because I'm like, how did I end up here? Like, I didn't even think about apartments. It just happened. And I was going crazy because I didn't know that all this stuff was going to happen. I thought you come into AA, you get sober, you go on about your life. Like, I really thought that you got, like, a certificate of completion when you were here. I had no clue. And, you know, and here I am doing all these things, trying to pull myself out of this rut. And all this crazy stuff is happening, this all for the better. And all of this stuff is putting me in a life that I'd never had before. And I went crazy for a little while, but not crazy like I'd ever gone before. I went crazy because I didn't know who I was. Like, I was kind of freaked out over the fact that I'm waking up every morning going, I'm this person I've never been before. And I don't know how to be this person. I like it, but it's scary. And so that person is the person I am today. And that person is the person who wakes up every morning, and I don't think about drinking and drugging. You know, I wake up every morning, I pray, which is weird for me. And I wake up every morning and I have happiness, which I'd never felt. All those years of drinking and drugging, I was just crazy. And I didn't know how to be. I was always searching for happiness. I used to always say all the time, well, if I had this, it would make me happy. If I could do this, it would make me happy. And now I'm happy with the person I am. Like, I truly had to learn to love myself. So the way I stay sober today is I have a great home group. I have a lot of people in my life that I'd never had before. I never had friends. Like, I had friends for a reason. I have friends now that are genuine that I'd never had before. I didn't know what a genuine friend was until I came in the rooms. And I do service work. As much as I hate it, I do service work. And, you know, I never knew how to help somebody without reaping a benefit from it. And now I know that if I help somebody, I don't need a pat on the back. I don't need a thank you note. I don't need anything from it. You know, people call me and ask me for advice nowadays, and it's weird. Like, I never have had anybody ask me for anything. But I'm grateful to those people because those people are what keeps me sober. And those people help me to take my mind off of my own crap. you know, reaching out to my sponsor every day, which my sponsor is like my mom. I mean, I love her to death. We have a great friendship. But I also know that she'll tell me when I'm being crazy. And 5 years ago, even 3 years ago, I would have fired her on the spot for that. I've gone through so many sponsors just because I didn't agree with what they were telling me. But then when I actually started working the program and not just being in the program, I started realizing that sometimes I'm going to get irritated with you. Like, and that's okay, but in the end, I know you're just trying to help me. And I've learned to really shut up and listen. And listening has gotten me a long way in these rooms. You know, coming to these meetings when people talk all the time, I can identify. And it's humbling, and it really makes me think about where I don't want to go back to. So thanks for letting me share.
Thank you very much, Jennifer.